listening to Loving BDSM Podcast, episode 115. Okay, Lord's here with the one, the only, the technically decaffeinated John Brownstone.
Yeah.
I know, decaf. It's late at night.
Scary.
I know. But you're blinking again, so there's that.
It's a cry for help.
Stop. Welcome to the Loving BDSM Podcast. This week we're talking about consent, but not necessarily about sex. If this is your first time listening, glad to have you. If you're back for another week, welcome back. Loving BDSM is produced every Friday for your kinky pleasure and education, and show notes are found at lovingbdsm.net. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite podcast app. If you love what you hear, we'd love a good review wherever you listen to us to help other kinksters find us. You can follow the show on Twitter at lovingbdsm, on FetLife at lovingbdsmpc, or on Instagram at lovingds and the number one, lovingds1. I'm really not a fan of that handle.
Tell me how you feel about it.
Oh, no, I could. I'm not ready for a rant like that. And all links are in the show notes. I don't really have any announcements this week other than to say that the thing I promised in episode 114 will likely not be up until sometime later on after this episode drops, which is our writer contribution page.
Yes.
My week got away from me. So it's coming up.
You've had a crazy week.
I have, and we will probably touch on some of that in the bonus section. I will get it up in the next day or two, so if you are listening to this and you're like, oh, it's gonna be there, give me a few hours. But before the weekend is up, it will be there if you would like to contribute to the blog. That's the only real announcement. We do have postcards, so yay for that, but we'll do that bonus section
later.
This week's topic is a little like heavy. I'll just warn people of that. Do you want to do a content warning? You saw that I've titled the episode "The Bigger Question of Consent." We said we were going to talk about consent, but not necessarily sex. That does not mean we will not refer to, mention, or touch on at least a little bit some form of like sexual assault, harassment, violence, the Me Too movement, some of the other conversations that are going on online. Mm-hmm. We don't anticipate getting into any graphic details of anything, but I also know that it can, if you are somebody who does have, you know, things in your past, trauma in your past that can negatively affect
trigger.
You.
Yeah.
Right. Even just having to hear about it one more time can be too much. So I figured I would sort of give people that option if they're like, I just can't handle this. Then that's cool. You skip episode 115, go to like the last 15 minutes or so. We'll probably be in the bonus section and we totally get it.
Yeah.
But with everything and with all the conversations I have been seeing online, I really did want to talk about it, but not in the way that really great, brave people are already talking about it. I, thankfully, knock on wood, have been fortunate. I know how lucky I am to have escaped some of what so many other people have. I have been sexually harassed at work. I wish I could say that the guy got fired because he sexually harassed me. It was just one thing in a litany of things he was doing wrong. I did sort of have the feeling at the time that the company attorney understood that had I decided to, you know, actually do something about it,
right?
That the company would have been screwed because they were not doing what they should have been doing. So I think he kind of helped, but I can't ever say that guy got fired because he sexually harassed me. He got fired for so many other reasons on top of it. But at least I didn't have to work with him anymore at a certain point. I was very fortunate in that. So I don't feel that I can add to the really important conversations going on about sex and consent. We have, if anybody's like, well, yeah, but why aren't you talking about sex and consent? Isn't this a kink show? It's called episode 30. In that episode, we talked about that consent is more than a yes or a no, because we talked about informed and enthusiastic consent.
Correct.
And affirmative consent versus, you know, waiting for somebody to say no. You know, that is how we live our personal relationships. That's the kind of consent we look for and expect.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of, if you've been listening for any length of time, you have heard us many, many times mention the importance of consent and getting consent. And then, yes, we do have a full episode on it. And we will link to that in the show notes if you haven't heard it or if it's been a while. But I didn't want to repeat that.
Right.
But I can't, I mean, and I don't want to add to any noise about it, but I do have perspectives. But my perspectives, the things that are on my mind, and And I would say, please do not think you're at this episode and you're going to get some life advice. Like, we sometimes will go, here's what you can do. This is just sort of a conversation and kind of, here's what I do. And if any of that speaks to you, great. And if hearing this, you have better ideas, please share them. So the blog post for this week was about non-sexual consent, meaning the ways we get consent from people that have nothing to do with sex and sometimes have nothing to do with relationships, the romantic or sexual relationships. Okay. So we talked about, you know, asking if before you can touch somebody and just a hug.
Certainly.
Right. You know, it's not just can the question of consent of can I fuck you, but like, can I give you a hug because I've never hugged you before and I don't know how you will respond to that. Or, you know, asking people if the decisions you want to make are okay, you know, is it okay if we do this? Are you good with this? And I think that we all understand that in many parts of our lives, we have to get consent for things. You can't just bowl through life and go, I'm going to do it my way. Fuck right. the rest of you. And yet there's that divide where there's a certain part of the world who is like, oh no, I understand I have to ask permission before I steal somebody's seat, but I don't have to ask permission before I touch them inappropriately or do what the hell I want to do in a sexual mm-hmm. moment. So there's, like I said, very smart people talk about this much better than I can. We have and will continue to talk about informed, enthusiastic, affirmative consent as part of correct. Kink. I think that the vast majority of people out there who can hear the sound of my voice right now get it on some level. You might still be learning. You might still be learning how to do mm-hmm. consent from a kink side of things. It is different. You do tend to ask more questions. But I also think that it shouldn't have to be different. I think that in the vanillas need to learn about consent the way the kinksters learn about consent.
Well, true.
I have to say I did see the absolute best tweet, and I saw it. Okay, so I have three Twitter accounts. Technically,
is that all?
Well, technically I have four because I have a vanilla one that I ignore now. I've just never deleted it, but I have three kink sex ones, right? So on one Twitter account, I saw this great tweet. I retweeted it. And I was like, let me go find it from my other at Kayla Lord's Twitter account. I want to retweet it there. And then I couldn't find it.
Oh, no.
It was such a good tweet.
Hey, when that happens.
Because this person who was tweeting it said something about, you know, I don't even know if she put the label vanillas, but that's how I read it. So the vanillas are like, what do you mean we have to get consent like that? What are you going to expect us to do? Sign a contract? And then next line, she's like, BDSM. Yeah. We've got a whole checklist system you're welcome to use. You want to copy right? that? Like, yes, actually you can do this in a contractual way with lists and everything. And you can make consent as detailed as humanly mm-hmm. possible. And I was like, actually, yeah, I think some of the vanillas could learn. BDSM. Oh, yeah. But
well, that's something that occurs. I mean, when you go to a munch, when I first started going to munches, you know, at the end, got to know people, you know, they would ask, is it all right if I give you a hug?
You know, that was both the oddest to me the first time I saw that, experienced that, and the most refreshing thing. Mm-hmm. When you were asked first if they could hug me, and then they did ask me as well. And I understood the dynamics there. They were asking you as the dominant. They were right. asking me as the human being with agency. And we both gave permission. We both consented. And it was weird because I'd never experienced that before. And then it was just like, oh my God, these people get it. Consent is not just between two people trying to fuck one another.
Yeah.
Consent is so much broader. Well, you know, you say that about the munchers and you're right. And they still, now that we've been going so long, the people I'm going to hug, they're going to come run up to me and hug.
They know.
And
yeah.
it's fine. And yet I know, I don't do this because it's not my way, but I know that if I was in a position of please don't touch me, I could either say it or give those signals.
And they would totally understand.
Right. And they wouldn't hold it against me.
Right.
You know, I think sometimes people will not always say, no, stop. This, we are not talking about sex and consent and rape. That is not what I mean. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the different kinds of situations. Please, please understand what I'm talking about. We're talking about you're at a munch and somebody wants to hug you and you cannot be touched right now. There are some of us, especially if you have anxiety or if you've got, you know, you want approval from people, whatever.
Right.
You may not say, please don't touch me, because you don't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
And yet I really feel like in the kink in our kink community, let me say that, the people
mm-hmm. oh, yeah.
who want to hug me, I could say, I love you so much, please don't touch me right now, I can't handle it. And yeah. they would be fine,
right.
you know, because we've established that relationship.
Correct.
And yet I also get the sense that if somebody asked if they could hug me, or they asked you and then asked mm-hmm. me, as it goes in our kink community, I could say, I appreciate it, but today I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And they would still go, oh, okay.
Right.
And the other place I saw that I got into a conversation with somebody today. It is late Thursday night before this episode drops, just to give you a time reference, about Eroticon and what to expect. And it was kind of cool to talk about. It wasn't just, oh, there's these workshops and this is how it goes. It was my feelings about Eroticon. And I said, it was one of the most inclusive places I've ever been at, with mm-hmm. the most inclusive people I've ever met outside of our, you know, the kink community. And now that we're talking about it, I am remembering that, yes, even there, some of us are kinky at Eroticon. Some of us are not kinky. Yeah. You know, it's just, we all get sex and consent and all that. Even there, I saw people, can I give you a hug? And we would all do that little shrug thing and pull back. Like, you might say no, and that's okay. Can I give you a hug? And then once we had established that rapport,
mm-hmm.
then it was different. And I think those things not only have broadened my horizons, because it's one thing to think about those things, and it's one thing to talk about them
right.
sort of academically, like, oh, this is what you should do. It's another thing to experience them.
Yeah.
I mean, because once you actually witness, first of all, it's jarring if you're not used to it. It's not jarring in a bad way, but it is a little bit like, whoa, I've never actually been asked. I've usually just been grabbed whether I cared or not. And once you start looking at things from that perspective, and again, I mean, in a very platonic, I worked for 7 years at a membership association. I will not say the industry, because it's just way too tight of a community. And I've lived in the South my whole life. I have been hugged against my will many times in life. And it never occurred to any of us to think that that was a problem.
Try growing up in an Italian family.
I can only imagine. So
get your cheeks pinched and,
right.
you know.
Well, and, you know, it's only now that we're starting to talk about these things. And I've been reading a lot of articles about how there's a generation divide in the conversation on consent among women.
Mm-hmm.
Older women will say, you should do this, you should do that, you should, you know, not complain, or you should be more forceful. And then younger women are going, I don't have to accept this behavior at all. And I always find myself somewhere in the middle of, I know what they mean on this side, but I totally know what they mean on that side. And how about I just worry about, like, how I'm going to try and handle it, and I'm still figuring my way through this as well. But I have, now that my eyes are more open to mm-hmm. the meaning of consent within kink and within sex, I also look at consent outside of that. And I think those are broader conversations that are happening too. It's a lot of parenting articles I've read over the past few years talk about how they won't force their children to hug somebody they don't want to hug,
right.
you know? And the first time it's so funny, this is how evolution of your thought process can work. The first time I read that, I'm not even sure the youngest was quite even, like, barely born. Like, he was still a newborn or something. And the oldest was going through the shy phase. It is definitely, he's out of that phase now. He is not shy anymore. And I read it, and it was one of those things where, you know, when you think something for so long, you don't think about why you think it's the right thing. You just, you accept it as that's just how it's been. And you don't think any deeper about that. Mm-hmm. You just go, well, this is how it is, and that's how it's always been done. And what do you mean you're telling, you know, what do you mean you're talking about doing it differently? And so the first time I read something about that, I kind of resisted the thought of it, because I also understood that I saw it from the other person's perspective of, I'm their grandmother, I want to show them love. Now, my thinking has evolved, and it evolved very quickly. Thankfully, there were enough other, like, mommy bloggers out there and mommy writers mm-hmm. who were talking about it more. And I guess I must have just finally read something that was written in a way that my brain went, oh, no, I totally get that. I totally agree with that. I'm not making my kids do that. But it's still, it's one thing to read it and go, yes, I agree with that. This is how things should be mm-hmm. and how I'm going to handle it. And it's another thing to do it out in the wild, right? So the first time some distant person who I didn't want to hug tried to hug one of my kids, I almost made them, because, again, that's every part of my childhood is you hug that distant relative you don't know, mm-hmm. and they freak you out and they make you feel you that's a stranger. Hug them anyway, right? And then I caught myself and I said, well, no, he doesn't. If he doesn't want to, he will when he wants to. It's a little bit of educating the other side of he will when he wants to.
Yeah.
He will decide.
When he feels he's ready, when he's comfortable.
When he's ready. In my head I'm going, and if he doesn't ever hug you, you need to get the hell over it. Right. I didn't say that, though, because the Southern breeding did kick in there. I was polite mm-hmm. to the older relative. But
I mean, some people are just physical touch like that is just not.
Right. Our youngest. He will physically touch me. He would, like, even now at 8, he'd sit on my lap if I let him. And he has warmed up to you.
Yes.
Y'all have a different dynamic than I do.
Correct.
But we allowed that to
grow on its own.
And yeah. he is not, shyness is not a phase for him. He is genuinely introverted and shy both. So you do, you know, I have learned, he's the one that forced me to learn to just let him decide on his own when he is ready, you know, because
yeah.
he won't be moved to do anything he doesn't want to do.
Right.
So it's sort of pointless to try, but those were
like leading a horse to water.
Right. Once he digs his heels in, I can't even lead him, let alone get him to drink. But, you know, it's those small things that on their face seem harmless that when you look at the world through a different prism, in this case, we're talking about consent, you start seeing those things of,
mm-hmm.
hey, wait, we really aren't getting, we're not, what I started seeing as a parent, and I think this is where my mind has gone with having this as a topic and the blog post I wrote earlier this week, is I personally don't think there's much I can do for anybody my age or older, anybody who's of an adult age or older. They have to be exposed to the messages about consent. We have to talk about it. But me as one person, I'm not sure of how much change I can make. You know, I'd like to think that by talking about it in this context where we do talk about the importance of consent, we help other people who maybe, like me, with those articles from mommy writers talking about hugs with their kids, right? You hear it over and over enough from enough sources, eventually one will click with you.
Right.
And if you did not see consent in the way we're talking about it, maybe one day you will. And if I can add my voice to that and we can add our voices to that, great. But when I think of what can I directly affect, for me, it's my kids.
Yeah.
And I'm raising boys here, so it really feels kind of important. Because the other message that it's one of those things, at the moment I heard it, I was like, why? That makes so much sense. Why haven't we been saying that longer? Or people have, I'm sure, have been saying it. Why haven't I heard them say it longer? It's the, we need to start teaching boys not to rape, not to sexually assault, not to sexually harass, not to put all the focus on teaching girls how to make them stop doing it.
Right.
The impetus is on the boys not to do it.
I'm going to say something, and I've been thinking about this for a while in light of a lot of the stuff that comes out, that has been coming out. I kind of call it male entitlement.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
Feel that as a male, I should be allowed to touch you anytime I want.
You should be allowed to stand as close to me as you want to
right.
especially if you're taller than me or somehow larger than me, make sure that I sense your, let's put this in air quotes, power.
Yeah, presence, yeah.
Right, so that I am very aware of who is in control, and that between in a consensual kinky relationship,
well, in
that's
a consensual,
hot as fuck.
But then again, you want to take it one step further. We are husband and wife.
Sure.
Okay. There are many who would say, because we're married,
you could just do that.
That's all the consent needed.
I know, and there's an entire, and I'm not smart enough to talk about it competently, so I will not, but was an entire part of the feminist movement back in the day that was to get marital rape recognized as a thing.
As a thing, yeah.
You know? So it's a pervasive thing. There's so much to it. It's just too big of a topic. There's I will just keep saying I'm not qualified. I feel like I can't tell personal stories. I'd like to think that if I could, I would, but I know some people can't, and I respect that too. They have their reasons. Now that my eyes are open and have been open in the past several years, this has been an evolution that's probably, I would say, 8 or 9 years in the making. Mm-hmm. From the very first time I read that, you know, don't make your kids hug somebody thing, all the way to now and my journey, evolution, whatever you want to call it, as a kinkster and experiencing consent on that level. It's one of those things that we don't use the word consent in other situations, really other than sexual and BDSM and kink and those kinds of personal relationships. But we're working on consent every moment of every day.
Well, I'll give you an example today of something. My morning, when I get up, consists of coffee, solitaire, and Tumblr.
Right? Lots of Tumblr porn.
Okay. I mean, that's how I do it. I read my email, I play solitaire, and I surf Tumblr. Now, today, we had a friend of ours coming to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She's a kinkster. I could have very easily left Tumblr.
Sure.
Plastered up on my screen in, you know, huge widescreen glory on my big monitor.
Yes, and it is a sight when there is a vulva on the screen. Oh my goodness.
But before she came over, I shut it all down.
Sure.
Because to my mind, I did not have her consent.
Right.
Even though she's a kinkster, that she walks in here and sees that.
Right. Because I think it's very comfortable to sort of assume this happens at Munch's all the time. We all know we're kinksters, so we feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it is a place where you can technically talk more openly because you know you're sitting with kinksters.
Sure.
But we have seen people walk in full gear, and to every person in the room's mind, you're like, oh my God, why didn't you just write kink on your forehead?
Yeah.
And there are some, most of us are kind of like, yeah, whatever. But you can almost always see at least a couple of people who sort of like sit back like, please don't sit next to me so it looks like you're with me. Not because they're ashamed of the other person, but because they're there trying to protect their own privacy.
Right.
And it is a really fine...
And protect the other patrons. If you're in a restaurant, protect the other patrons.
Right. And it's a really fine line. And there's no definite answer on something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's, okay, this is how I choose to present myself to the world. And you are free to do that.
Mm-hmm.
However that works. But then there's another person's like... I feel like you have just blared out to the whole room that we're all kinky. And that might not be true, but that is still, that's a gray area and that's a fine line.
Yeah.
But I think about it in other ways too. I did this and thank God she is my friend. Thank God. I was like, I want to show you this picture. And it never occurred to me to make sure I asked her first. And I feel awful about it. Do you want to see my butt? Like, that's a question I should have asked. You know, it's part of my comfort level that I could just go, let me show you this picture.
Yeah.
And her comfort level that she went, why are you showing me your butt? And I was like, oh, there's a story. And I had forgotten to tell the story that would have then culminated in, do you want to see?
Yeah.
And that
got a little ahead of yourself.
I got a little ahead of myself.
Yeah.
And thankfully, it was okay.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. If we walk away from interactions going, oh my God, I dodged a bullet there, then we're not as mindful about consent as we want to be. And I think that's the thing that my internal barometer is sort of dealing with as how do we help the people we can help, because we can't help everybody.
Right.
How do we help them be more aware of consent in everything, not just in sex? Because my theory is, and I put this in the blog post, if you can be aware of consent in daily interactions that have nothing to do with sex, you have the capacity, whether you choose to use it or not, to be aware of consent in a sexual framework. You know, we still have to have the conversations about sex and consent. We can't just assume if you know, you can handle consent outside of sex that you automatically will inside of sex. We still have to have those conversations. But I'm going to make the assumption that if you understand you cannot put your hands on me until I give you permission, just to shake my hand or hug me, then you should understand the concept once we're both naked, you know? And again, like I said, I can't fix the whole world. I can't help the whole world. We can just keep talking about it and hope we get through to somebody that needs it. But what I can do is I can raise my kids a certain way. And I say I, and it's we, it's you and I doing it together. And, you know, I've seen some of these conversations going on online where more and more parents are kind of talking about it. I've seen it more from sex educators who happen to be parents who are like, I'm thinking about this, I'm mindful of this. And I think that we all need to sort of extend our reach to non-sex educators who happen to be parents and say, actually, we can... And it's easier than you realize. And we do it in ways because we don't equate the word consent with things outside of sex. Mm-hmm. We don't realize sometimes that we, one, have the ability to do it or that we're already doing it.
Yeah.
Because the first time I consciously did it, I remembered because you looked at me and you're like, oh, yeah. And then we talked about it and we both do this now. I said to the children who cannot help but just shove the fuck out of one another.
Yeah.
We do not put our hands on people who don't want to be touched.
Right.
When somebody says, stop touching me, you stop. And it was.
Stop means.
Right. Stop. And you're very good at going, no means no. And there's the other side of that conversation where we have to and we will teach them about affirmative consent and those kinds of things. But we're starting, I think, at where they're at.
Right.
Is and how I look at it.
Absolutely. I mean, they're at a point. I mean, you can't really explain to them.
And at least not the 8-year-old. I've had some conversations with a 12-year-old, right. But it's not as in depth as I hope we get to, but we're working on it. And that's the other thing. So I don't want anybody to think that, oh, well, you tell your children not to hit each other. So you think they're going to know not to do something awful and evil to another human being sexually. No, we have to work on those conversations separately.
It's laying the groundwork.
And that's how I look at it. I look at it as laying the groundwork. I look at it as if I can get you to understand that you have your own personal agency and this and your brother has their own personal agency, then it is not that short of a leap that other people have their own agency.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we do talk about, you know, not as often as I would like, but we do talk about treating people with kindness, you know.
Sure.
When they start being real snarky and sarcastic with one another, it's the joy of having snarky, sarcastic children. I don't know where they got it from.
I don't know.
It's a mystery. I have to say to them, whoa, that's not kind, you know.
Right.
Because it's not, I mean, that... I told myself when I realized that their biological father was not going to help raise them at all, that it was my job, and this is before I met you, that it was my job to raise them to be two good, decent men. And if I could do that, regardless of anything else, then I had done what I'm supposed to do as a parent. Like, I can't raise them to make a shit ton of money and support me in the lifestyle with which I would like to become accustomed. I have explained to them that they will be taking care of me in my old age. And I expect it to be good. But they looked at me very, very, like, not happy about that.
Huh?
Right. I have told the 12-year-old that. I've said, this is how I see my job. So these are the things I focus on. Mm-hmm. I can't make them be rich. I can't make them have successful careers. I can't raise them to be any of that. I can hopefully raise them to... have some sort of work ethic and to strive and to want more and whatever. But this I can teach them. Yeah. This is a direct thing I can teach them.
Because being successful, having a powerful career, earning a lot of money, is not a gauge of character.
No, God knows. No, it's not. Some of the kindest, best human beings I've ever met in my life didn't have two pennies to rub together.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I, yes, I expect him to work hard in school and to try and to, you know, live up to his potential. Of course I do. But at the end, I'm like, if you can treat other human beings with some amount of kindness and to think about how they might feel and to think about how they, you know, that if you don't want to be touched, and these are the other types of conversations, you didn't like being touched that way. No. Then why did you do it to somebody else? And it's these things that many parents out there are going, yeah, that's called parenting. You're right. But we're not framing it as lessons in consent. And the moment I, for me, the moment I started framing things and I've got to teach these children how to treat other human beings of any gender well, and I've got to teach them about consent, and I've got to teach them about healthy sexuality. That's the other part of this that I certainly did not get as a child. Many of us did not. Many of us had parents who just are just even now physically incapable of talking about sex. My mother, she can a little bit, but it's still, you can still see her do a full body cringe. she's trying though. She's really, really trying. So we have to sort of overcome the way we were taught to, in order to do better.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm thinking today while we're recording this of the non-sexual aspects of consent and the small ways and of talking about consent in different ways. But the sexual side is very important. But back to my point, I went down a little hole there. the moment I reframed what I was doing as a parent to teach them proper behavior is teaching them about consent.
Right.
It was a little bit like seeing for myself the first time when you ask somebody if you can hug them, that seeing it in live action, you see things differently.
Yeah.
Now, clearly I don't always get it right, or I would not have shared with my best BG friend my ass without asking first. You know, clearly I don't get this right all the time. Thankfully, well, none of us are hurting people, though.
We're all capable of mistakes. We're only human beings. But I think the first step in it is to be mindful.
Yes.
The more you practice the mindful of it, keeping it in your mind and being aware of it, the more you are able to do it, to practice it.
And you spot things that we've all been taught are quote end of quote normal, you know, put air quotes around normal, right? We've been taught that that's just how it is, that, you know, why are you complaining? We've all been doing that forever. Well, good Lord, for years, humanity didn't bathe more than once a year. I don't think that was that was the best idea we ever had. We were able to change that. I think we can change our thinking on things.
But it's going to take an awareness.
It takes awareness, and it takes, like I said, the only way I feel like I personally can have a one-on-one direct impact on it is how I raise my kids. Yeah. I will defend a person of any gender, because while we have been heavily heteronormative on this, male versus female, because of the prevalence of it, we both know it happens to anybody and everybody.
Yes.
But we also know, let's be more real, who it happens to most of the time. But if somebody is brave enough to speak out, I'm going to hear them. I'm going to support them. You know, it's too difficult to talk about it for me to think that everybody who's talking about it is lying about it. My first impulse is to go, nope, if you were that brave, I'm with you. You know, you have my full support. And so I know that in the small ways that we talk about it and as part of kink education, we probably make some differences and we might help in some ways. But if I want to make a direct impact, it's in this way. It's as a parent. Yeah. It's what I do for the generation coming up. And maybe, so I'll say this side note. Y'all know we don't really talk about politics here, but this amused me greatly. So the 12-year-old takes civics now for his social studies class, civics. So they're learning about government, and learning about voting, and they took like this little like survey kind of thing to try and see, based on current normal politics, right now we are not in normal politics, but current normal politics, where they might fall from left-leaning to right-leaning.
Okay.
The 12-year-old is a moderate. He is a left-leaning moderate. And I will admit to you, y'all, we know we don't talk much about politics here. It was a proud moment for me. Okay. It just was. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But I already see it in him. And he came home and said, Mom, some of my classmates, they're like, it was cool to see where we all fell, but some of them, I don't agree with their politics. I said, honey, that's okay. I said, first of all, you don't have to. Second of all, you're only 12. Politics are important to all of us. If we live, you know, in the country, in the world, politics matter to all of us. But I don't want you to be worried that your friends don't agree with you politically. not at this point. Okay. Yeah, can we? But he does say things that, you know, give me hope for the future generations. But I don't think that's his politics. I think the younger kids just get it better than we do.
Possibly.
You know, not all of them. There's always going to be political divides. There's political divides among our listeners. That's why we don't talk too terribly much about it. Not pointedly, anyway. But he does give me hope. He says he'll be the first one to go, Mom, I think that's racist. And then, and it was a reflex at first to go, I don't think so, because it was these small things. And then I went, wait a minute, what the hell do I know? I'm a white chick in America. I probably don't know as much as I would like to think I know. So I have learned to sort of sit back and step back and go, well, why do you think that? You know, and let him talk to me about it. And he will go, that's sexist. And sometimes I'm like, and that's how I know I'm winning as a parent. Yes, you're right, that is. And so, but by him having this conscious awareness of these things, I mean, he was 11 the first time I said the word rape to him, you know, and I explained in 11-year-old terms away from the then 7-year-old what that meant. And he was horrified. He was absolutely horrified. And I thought, okay, we're on the right track. There's no guarantee of anything, but we're on the right track.
Yeah, there's a gleaming of understanding.
Yes, and every time I hear him, he's not always right about when he calls something out as an ism, pick one. But he is more often right than he is wrong. And he sees things that because of the way this younger generation is looking at the world, I don't necessarily see, and I have to check my assumptions and go, wait a moment, do I think that just because for 38 years on this planet, that's how we've done things, right? And that's the beauty of opening up the conversation and the teaching of consent and equality and fairness and all of these things that we are choosing to teach them and to make them aware of. First of all, at a certain point, you have no more control over what they think of anything. So get in while they're young. They're going to make up their own minds. But the moment I sort of realize, you know, here we're having these conversations, it's a give and take. You know, his way of seeing the world is completely different from mine for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, mostly technology, mostly how interconnected we all are on this planet. None of us were raised that way. This generation is raised that way. And it has allowed a dialogue about these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important, too, because sometimes it's the reason you're not going to see me argue with anybody on Twitter, for sure. Okay. It's a small space for a few amount of words to try and make important points. And certain points are really easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Yes, you must get consent before you touch anybody. That's a really easy
right.
point to make. But in the teaching moments where we talk about consent outside of that, where I'm saying, don't touch your brother, you know, if he doesn't want to be touched, or don't do this, or ask first. You know, that's the other part of the lesson. I say to them, ask first.
Yeah.
Ask. Open your mouth and ask. If you don't know, ask. Don't assume. Ask. And those are lessons that will be important all through in every aspect of life. But because my mind is working in a different direction, I'm thinking of it very purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
I see the connection. I see, whoa, wait, okay. If that's what gets hammered into him, both of them, you always ask if you don't know. You ask if you have even a moment of uncertainty, then that's another way of talking about this. They don't understand yet that that's another way of talking about this, but I understand it. And so I just, in everything going on, like, I don't have any answers. I don't necessarily think the way I'm trying to do this is the right, perfect way. I'm fumbling my way through like every other parent on the fucking planet. But I think that it's something that more parents, especially of boys, but all parents really need to think about. And if you are a kingster who can negotiate down to the nth degree the consent you're going to give in your kinky fuckery, then by God, you can look at your kid and say, we don't touch people who don't want to be touched.
Right.
You know, and you can start it where they're at their age level, you know, and in whatever way works for your kids and you, you can have these discussions. You can think about these things, and then maybe we can actually raise the next generation to be so much better than we are. Just please be better than we are. And it's because it's such a big topic, and because there's so much nuance to it, technically I could talk forever, but I don't have anything new and you know, revelatory to add to the debate. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have, you know, like I said, I have my own personal story of sexual harassment. I will say, without going into details, not that I'm afraid to share them, but I said at the top of this, I did not think we would get into it. So sorely respecting the people who went, mm-hmm. if you just don't give me details, I can hang out. I might one day write about it or something. The biggest thing was how long it took me to realize what had happened.
Mm.
Because I thought it was my fault. I thought that I, you know, all of those things that go with that. So,
well, there's you know, being on Tumblr, especially, there are men who feel, well, this woman has a sex blog.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Therefore, I can just approach her and tell her, hey, suck my dick.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No.
I know. And it's one of
you
those...
You know, and... But I think that's that entitlement.
Yes. And know, I think you're absolutely right. I think that I'm glad you said it as a man. That men
and it's not. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know... Anybody has a right to express themselves any way mm-hmm. they want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's an open invitation.
Mm-hmm. I know. And that's why I applaud the people out there on social media, through their own websites, through the work that they do, who fight this every day, who go out there and they are willing to do battle on the internet
mm-hmm.
with badly behaving human beings, you know, who have that sense of entitlement, who don't understand or care. It's usually they don't care
yeah.
about boundaries or consent. And they go out there and they're, I don't mean this, ironically, they're fucking warriors. 'Cause I can't do that. It's not, I would be in the corner of the bedroom shaking and crying all the time to try and do that. It is not something I can do. So mm-hmm. I support the people who do it, even when I don't always agree, because I think consent is very easy to actually agree on, quite frankly. But maybe I disagree with approach, or I disagree mm-hmm. with some points that get made, that maybe I see things a little differently. But in general, yeah, I'm with them. I just can't do what they do. So for me, it's like, well, what can I do? Where do I have a voice? Where can I make a difference? You know, and I think I read something or heard it. Maybe I heard it in one of the podcasts I was listening to. Yes, I heard it in a podcast I was listening to. Thank you, Pixie, for getting me onto The Guilty Feminist. That is an awesome podcast. The person was saying that if every single person did what they could to help one person and just one, then the whole world would be a better place.
Well, it's like the old thing about the ripples in the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Starts out small and it spreads.
Exactly. So my personality cannot do that battle that so many really brave, good people do.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing I can do. And I think a lot of us...
But you make your... You go about it in a different way.
Yes. And I think that is another thing to think. I think that if you are a kinkster listening to the sound of our voice, you are probably just as passionate about consent as we are, because it is the hallmark of what the fuck we do with each other.
Sure.
Right? So if you have internalized the importance of consent in your kinky fuckery, then it's actually not a leap to look at it in other ways. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of you probably do look at it in that way, just maybe didn't think of it that way. And if anybody had an aha moment, then I would love to know that. So... No, and I know some of you are like, I can't go out online and just yell at people. I can't. No, you don't have to. What can you do? Who in your life can you look at? A child, you know, your own child, a niece, yeah. a nephew, a grandchild. Who can you impact where you can have these conversations with them? And not in a sexual context. I mean, I wrote a blog post a couple weeks ago about how I'm raising my children with a better understanding of sex than I was raised with. They will have a healthy mm-hmm. understanding of it to the best of my ability. And there was a comment on the blog that said, I really want to have these kinds of conversations with my grandson, but I have to yes. be careful. His parents will not, that they would yank him away from me because they would not approve. And I in a little bit of ways said, you know, in some of the conversations I have, I never actually mentioned sex. The 12-year-old and I talked about the concept of your kink is not my kink, but your kink is okay. And I never said the word kink.
Yeah.
Or sex.
Right.
And we managed to have that conversation. But I think if you are in a situation where you think it's not appropriate for me to talk about this with a child this age, or this isn't my child to have this conversation with, and I you know, you have to respect a parental authority.
Mm-hmm.
I think my point is if you have that person somewhere in your life, and maybe they're not even a kid, maybe they're older, that you can impact and have these conversations with, they don't even have to be about sex.
Right.
I mean, eventually, yes, the conversation needs to get there. You know, we need to, especially with kids, there has to be a point where we're telling them
I think a lot of the ways, you know, maybe you can't approach them directly.
Right.
But it can be done subtly. Mm-hmm. By example.
Example is certainly one way. And in everyday ways, there are so many ways that we don't call it gaining consent, but we gain consent.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're one of the assholes of the world, and we've all dealt with them, right? Like the person who says, may I, when they want to walk in front of you, or they, you know, they say, do you mind if they have to do a mm-hmm. thing, if they have to reach over you, you're like, I'm so sorry, do you mind? People ask for consent in things all the time. We just right. don't call it consent.
True.
And the only reason I think of it in these terms now is because I'm working with the kids and teaching them concepts of consent
mm-hmm.
in everyday life. Yeah. And so I don't know that I have a whole point. I think we said that at the top, that this wasn't I have a direction that I'm going with this. I think there's more. The important conversation is happening. It needs to continue to happen. It's going to get worse before it gets better, because everything that changes, that's just how it goes. I absolutely support anybody who has to relive some really shitty things every time the conversation comes up. If you have told your story, I find you amazing. If you're not ready yet, I support you. This is another side that I personally have been thinking of, and I don't think this is the side of the consent debate that needs to suck up any amount of oxygen. I think the bigger debate is much more important. But if you sort of look at it, if you're looking at it going, I don't know what I can possibly do, or how I can add to this, or how I can make a difference, or, you know, and especially if you feel hopeless about it, and it's easy to feel hopeless, I think that there are other, if we think about it in other ways, then maybe we can affect teeny tiny little itty bitty changes in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And all those small teeny tiny changes that don't seem like much right now on their own, they add up.
They add up.
You know, I'll give you another example of how my own behavior has changed. So in my family, all the way back at least a couple of generations, nobody likes to be tickled, and yet we love to torture each other with tickling. Maybe kink is in our blood. I don't know. So, you know, as a kid, my parents weren't real touchy-feely. They didn't show affection physically much, but every once in a while there'd be like a tickle war. And I loved the attention I was getting. I liked laughing. I hate being tickled. We've had that conversation yes. before. And so you go, stop, stop, stop. And the point of the tickling is to keep doing it because you're torturing the person, right? This is not a kinky thing. It's like a kid and a bigger kid, or a kid and an adult. And I, again, because that's just what I knew to be normal, I would do that to the kids. And they go, moms. And they'd be laughing. But moms, stop, stop, stop. And once I'd sort of switched my brain into a different mode.
Mm-hmm.
The moment they go, mom, stop, I can't take anymore. Poop, hands off. Completely.
You see it in a whole different light.
I immediately move back. I put my hands up so that they know. Now, right. And I'm not saying you can't have a tickle game or a tickle fight in your family. That's not what I'm trying to say. Because sometimes they, like the 8-year-old, he loves it. Being tickled. He's like, please keep tickling me. And then eventually when he's finally ready, he'll go, no, I can't.
Right.
And I've seen you do it too. We both go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we let him decide.
Right.
The oldest is like his mother and really doesn't like to be canceled. No. And so it takes him about half a second to realize he's been tickled. And, you know, again, as his mother, I might not go, can I tickle you? It is part of a natural interaction. It is part of we're playing, he's tickling me, I tickle him back, he accepts it. So I do it some more, and then he goes, I'm done. Okay. And they, I know they're not thinking of that. They're not conscious of any of this.
No.
They don't have to be yet. You know, with the 12-year-old, I am having more conversations with them. We our time to do it is few and far between, which is frustrating. But what I've noticed is every time we finally have another conversation that involves sex or consent or the things that I'm trying to teach him,
right?
He's further along every time we have the conversation. Mm-hmm. So sure. We can get more in depth. We can get more serious, like that kink conversation that did not. I never said the word kink. I'm still speechless when I think about it, because I'm like, I'm having this conversation with my 12-year-old. We're essentially talking about kinks, but wait, what? I'm doing this? And he is accepting. I mean, I think that's the most fascinating part of it. He's like,
right.
So it kind of started out as a sex conversation. It was, I can't remember how it got there, but I said, well, people can be into anything. And he knew what I meant when I said into anything. We had established that we were kind of talking about sex. He goes, anything. I said, yeah, anything on the planet. He goes, lamps? I said, I assure you, there's somebody out there who's into lamps. And he said, and he goes, really? I'm like, yeah. And so I was able to say, you don't have to like something for it to be, you know, I can't remember, legitimate for somebody else to like it.
Correct.
And he went, well, that makes sense. I was like, oh God, you just made my job easier, right? And so the conversation continues a little bit. And this is when I finally interjected sex more into the conversation, because I am on the hunt for these teaching moments, you know, because I try to make them a natural part of the conversation, because when I kind of come at him like a bull in a china shop, we're talking about the sex right now. He looks like he's going to hide under the table. But I said, you know, there's going to be times in your life when people are going to tell you that this thing that you enjoy that turns you on is somehow wrong. I said, as long as you, here we go. I'm bringing it back to the actual topic. As long as you have the consent of your partner, you do what makes y'all feel good.
Right.
And I don't care who your partner is or what gender they are, as long as it's legal and as long as you both consent, you have a good time. And he went, I said, people are going to try and tell you that what you like is wrong. I said, those are the only two things that matter, consent and that, you know, of both partners. And yes, please do a legal thing. Like, don't murder somebody because you get off on it. Like, I'm trying to like cover all my bases, but it's kind of when you go down that path of thinking about consent and how you can teach somebody who is not necessarily ready for sex or even to talk about sex, that there's consent in so many different ways, that there are so many different lessons and there are so many different opportunities to have conversations about consent. I've not been in a position to do this, so I can't speak from any experience, but I can see having a conversation about consent with another adult who wants to fight you on what the hell that means by using non-sexual things as the example. Like, okay, take out the fact that it's a sexual component, or this kink component. Let's replace how you behave in the office with your coworkers, you know, and use that as the example. And I think you might be surprised at how people go, oh, wait, those things aren't two completely and totally separate concepts. Actually, no, they go together.
Yep.
Go together. So, yeah. I don't have a way to wrap up. I don't have a point.
No, but it was a good, it was an interesting listening to you talk.
I know.
No, it's okay. But it's a matter of being aware of it on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
You know, having that mindfulness and putting it into practice as much as you can.
I know. And I think that for us as kinksters, assuming that you are a health, safe, good or attempting to be good kinkster, you already get this.
Right.
You already know this. You already know your submissive's not there. It shouldn't be there unless they consent fully. You already know you shouldn't touch somebody to do anything kinky or sexual with them. until you get consent. The concept is already there. It's just a different way of thinking about it. And it won't solve the bigger problems or the bigger conversations. And it's not more important than the bigger conversations going on. It's just for those of us who are like, I don't know. My mind has been in this fog with it the past couple weeks. And I thought I would record those foggy thoughts, I guess. I always think that you are better about it than I am, because as the dominant, you have to think about it in ways I don't always, in our interactions, I don't always have to think about it.
Yeah, it is something that's there more.
Right.
So for me, yeah.
Right, as the one who's got the control and authority. Right. Now, technically, in order for you to have that, I do have to have your consent. You know, we don't really talk about that. But once you've said, yes, I accept, sure, then it is kind of more on you. Now, it is
true. It doesn't end there.
Right. And it is on me as your submissive who is dedicated to communicating openly, which can be difficult. It's a skill that has to be learned, to be able to step up and go, no, I have to say no to this. Here's why. Because we're in a relationship where I will be open with you.
Yeah.
When I can. It's usually after the mental health crisis passes that I can talk about why I had to say no. But, you know, eventually I'll at least get there.
Right.
Here's why. But I have that freedom in that. And I have to use that freedom.
Yeah.
And if you are in a situation, I will say to anybody out there, if you're in a situation where you know technically on paper you're supposed to have consent and you do not feel like you have the freedom to dissent and give a dissenting opinion and say no and withdraw your consent, I'm going to make a blanket statement here, but you are in a very bad situation.
Mm.
And whatever help that, you know, needs to be provided, we, you know, resources or get you in touch with people who can help you, whatever, you know, you can anonymously reach out to us. If we know of a resource, we will make sure you have that information.
Right.
Because that is how this is supposed to work.
Correct.
It is a give and take. And just as much as you have to ask for consent to do something or get consent, I have to have the freedom to withdraw that consent.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Correct.
That's a good... Okay, there. I feel like we had a teaching moment. That's a good note to end on.
Okay.
All right. Because this is a sticky, big, massive, important topic, we do not think we have all the answers. We do not think we've... we've covered like an inch of it, y'all. Just like this teeny tiny
little
corner of it. So if you have thoughts or ways that you are dealing with consent or teaching others about consent, feel free to reach out. We've said this before. We'll say it again. It is okay to disagree with us. It is not okay to be an asshole.
Yeah.
I've finally gotten to a point where I do not respond to asshole messages. Oh, I'll say something about that in the bonus episode, because that was awesome too. I did a thing. I was very proud of me. So agree or disagree. If you've got thoughts, if it dredged things up for you, good or bad, you're free to share them with us. You can email us, you can message us on FetLife, you can message us on Twitter, however you're comfortable reaching out. I really hope we did not inadvertently bring up some yucky stuff for anybody. That was not our intention. I'm only learning now really how to try to do good content warnings. So it is a learning process. I might not have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're working on it. Thankfully, most of our topics don't necessarily need content warnings, but every once in a while. So I'm trying to be more conscious of that too. Other than that, we, like I said, bonus section, I got stuff to dish and we did get postcards. So yay, stick around for that if you're interested. But yeah, I think that's it.
Think we're good?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Keep it kinky, y'all. And we'll see you next week. Can I? Please? Think of the crickets.
Ask nicely, baby girl.
Please, Daddy, can I talk to the crickets? Because I love them and they love us. Please, please, please.
Yes, baby girl.
Thank you, Daddy. Okay. That was a really heavy topic, and if we dredged anything up for anybody, oh my god, I'm so sorry. If you decided that you could not handle that topic and you just skipped to the bonus section, that's cool. I totally get that. And hi, welcome. I at this point, after such a heavy topic, I need this moment. So I'm gonna go with snark and sarcasm and levity, because I think we all need to, like, I think I just buried us all deep in the ground with
that. Okay.
Because you know what we did for the past hour? I took everybody on a tour of the way my thoughts work. I am so sorry.
I have to live with it. Oh, wait. Did I consent to that?
Yes, I told you / asked you earlier about this, and you went, okay. It was not enthusiastic, but it was informed. And it is hard. I always hesitate to wade into really big, hairy, sensitive topics because it triggers so many emotions in people, and not all of them are positive. And a feeling may be triggered that then gets attached to something we say that was not our intention, but it still caused it anyway. And it's just messy. And I will not sleep for 24 hours after this episode goes live because I'll be very worried that I have done harm to somebody. But we're going to do postcards now because postcards are awesome. So we got a postcard from our sex blogging friend, Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in Washington State, where it is probably fucking cold right now. He is clearly dreaming of warmer times because there's a an artwork piece. It's a drawing. It's not like a photograph of a Hawaiian dancer on the beach.
Yep.
And it's a very nice postcard. I need to take pictures and pop these on Instagram. So maybe by the time you actually hear this episode, they'll already be on our Instagram. And then another one we got from Mel in Australia. Hi, Mel in Australia. We love you. And it is, it says on the front, this postcard says, follow your heart, but take your coffee with you.
Of course.
I go everywhere with my coffee. We were talking about the other day, when the zombie apocalypse comes, while everybody else is scrounging for bullets and water, we will scrounge for coffee.
Yeah.
And whatever we need to keep the coffee maker running, or all the French presses we will ever need.
Yeah, we've got French press, so we're good.
And yes, we will be the place if you need a caffeine fix 5 years after the zombie apocalypse. So we've already started our collection. we were gifted over Christmas with some excellent coffee. We've got Tim Horton coffee. And then the small coffee place out of
Alpaca.
Thank you, Alpaca. We've got that. I still haven't tried that. You have. And you're drinking it and you're loving it. I haven't tried it yet.
It's very good.
We still had some Starbucks ground coffee that we had purchased. And then when we were at the grocery store, they were having a clearance sale on their holiday flavors. And we only have one holiday flavor we like, and that is peppermint mocha. And so then on top of everything else, we bought a bag of Dunkin' Donuts peppermint mocha. And I am not proud, but I'm just saying, at the zombie apocalypse, y'all head down to Florida, we will have coffee.
We will have coffee.
Thank you for the postcards. If anybody would like to send us a postcard, I know some people have sent mail and it just hasn't arrived. I know one person, I've been talking to her on Facebook for ages, and she's wonderful and kind. I'm not going to say her name because it's Facebook. I think that's her real name. And she said, I don't think you ever got my postcard. I said, well, where was it coming from? She said, I sent it from here. And I'm like, I don't think we did. And then a couple weeks have passed, and she finally messaged me the other day and said, I think my postcard got lost in the mail. And I am so sad about that. But I know good intentions totally count, and trying totally counts, and sometimes the post office sucks.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. So, but yes.
I know it.
Right. If you have sent your mail and you're not hearing anything, if it's been more than a couple weeks, feel free to message us on whatever channel you want to message us on and let us know, because it could have been lost in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just not have gotten here. But yeah, that was a postcard we lost in the mail. To my knowledge, it is the first and only postcard we've lost in the mail. So I guess that's not so bad. I had to graduate up from one size box to keep my postcards to a bigger box.
You need a bigger box?
I found a bigger box. It will not last long. And I love that. That's a wonderful problem to have. So I have to tell you, it's not snarky. It's totally justifiable. There's been a conversation going on more and more among sex bloggers about the fact that we don't have to let just anybody comment on our blogs and our websites. That's our space, our domain. You know, you're going to come onto my blog and be an asshole, I don't have to respond to your comment. I don't even have to let it go through. And the way I've always sort of tried to be safe about comments is, if you are a first-time commenter, you're automatically moderated. I did have a glitch there's a couple people who it's glitchy and they always get moderated, and I don't know what that's about. But with everybody else, first time you comment, it's moderated, so you won't see it immediately. I have to go in and approve it. But that way I can weed out like crazies.
Yeah.
And I have done so in the past. I got one person who was clearly a troll who was trying to start an argument, and I just ignored him. This one was somebody... So on KaylaLords.com, the original site that started it all...
Where it all began.
Years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, I wrote one... is still to this day my most popular blog post. 10 signs he's an asshole, not a dominant.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can always tell when it gets shared out again for... in some other format, because my views on my blog just blow the fuck up. People are like, yes, right? Okay, so somebody tried to comment and say, a dominant, essentially, this is me paraphrasing, a dominant is automatically an asshole. You're just parsing words. You're just trying to justify bad behavior. Yes, that is bad behavior, but it's just two sides of the same coin. It's all the same thing. You're just, you know, finding the loopholes. And I went, and... there was a time I would have gone, oh, I should probably have a debate about this. So a teaching moment. And in that moment I went, no, I don't have to do that. Trash. And we moved on. Because, yes, you are allowed to have whatever opinion you want. And I am allowed to not bring toxicity into my space. And if you're going to come onto a Kingster's blog and go, you're full of shit, then you're not trying to have a debate with me.
Right. It's like I've told you before. You know, it's okay to have an opinion.
Yes.
Do it constructively.
Right. Right. Okay. And this
just,
was not.
Just like at this show, I had a lady come up to me who was a photographer.
I love this story. This is
and she asked me, she said, you know, I love your stuff, but would you be open to some ideas? And I always am. And I'm always willing to listen to somebody who has it. And I told her yes. And she presented me with a number of things. And they were very brilliant and really very good ideas. And as I can, I'm definitely going to implement a number of them. But, you know, she didn't present it as an attack. She didn't walk up and say, you know, your display sucks.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. That's why I think we add the, you can disagree with us, you cannot be an asshole about it. I will ignore you if you come at me as an asshole. Tell me, say, you know, I heard this thing you said. Here's why I disagree. Acknowledge the fact that I fucking had my own opinion. Right or wrong or indifferent. And then tell me why you disagree. Don't just say, you're wrong, you suck, ha ha, and run off laughing. I hear like, oh, what was the little character on The Simpsons 100 years ago that had that annoying laugh? I won't do it because I'd probably burst eardrums.
Ralph Wiggins?
Yes! Be why we're perfect for each other. I will remember the obscure thing, but not the name. You will remember the name. Oh God. So yeah, I mean, that's sort of how it feels. So yeah. I had that moment, and I don't do that often. I have allowed some comments through that. I think if me now would go back to me then and go, what the fuck are you doing? But most people really are kind. Comments on blogs don't happen near as much anymore because we've all been traumatized by the comment section of a blog.
Yeah.
They just have. So I moderate mine when you're new. And then once you're not new, you have free reign. But if you get past that first moderation, it's because you're a human being who's mostly kind, you know? You disagree, but you're kind. I can deal with that.
Well, that's like there's a dominant on... Tumblr.
You're obsessed with Tumblr lately. You noticed that?
Yeah. But I don't know the man personally. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say his name just because I don't have consent to.
Right. Thank you. There you go.
And but I have followed him for some time, and he has been in the lifestyle for a number of years. And he tends to get a lot of questions from Kingsters that he responds to. And he and I have a lot of the same values, okay? And I respect the answers that he gives. He gives, but there is a group on there that is attacking him.
There's always, yeah. It drives me crazy.
you know. So it can be tough.
And here's the thing that I am constantly reminding myself of. This is why we've said this multiple times. I do not think I'm always right. You do not think you're always right. It's why you and I get along. I joke about always being right, but it really is a joke. It is very easy to watch the person putting themselves out there and criticize them as being wrong. That's the easy thing.
Yeah.
And there's this really famous quote that I'm not even going to try and quote. It's a quote. I'm not going to try. I'll fuck it up. And I'll misquote who it was. We're going to leave it alone. But basically, the whole premise is, it is very easy to be the one criticizing. It is much harder. It's called the man in the arena quote, if you want to Google it. It's much harder to be out there in the arena, dusty, sweaty, dirty, exhausted from doing the fucking thing, you know?
Yeah.
If you go about doing your thing with integrity and with good intentions, even when you get it wrong, I'm going to respect you, you know? But, you know, that happens in every world, and including the sex blogging world, but I will not.
Yeah.
I leave that alone, too, because I'm a no-drama kind of girl. Right. So, no, I did. What else? Because this is the bonus section, and this is our pretend kitchen table. Other people, I got messages. Other people like that analogy, too. So, to the person who gave me that analogy, who I now can't remember who it was, I'm so sorry. Thank you for it. I remember it. I just can't find the email anymore of all the emails. Well,
okay, I'm gonna go in a different direction.
Please do.
We both had a little bit of a rough week.
Oh God, I know.
And we did something today.
That was so awesome.
We played hooky.
Yes.
And we got together with one of Kayla's baby girl friends.
It was wonderful.
And we went to the mall.
We did. We did go to the mall. That was a very 90s thing to say. We went to the mall.
And did some shopping.
I got new clothes.
She got some new clothes. We went to Spencer's and poked around in Spencer's for a little bit.
And y'all, we learned of a cultural divide about Spencer's. So in my formative years, my experience with Spencer's was in extremely deep South states like Mississippi and Alabama, which have laws against sex toys. If you are not from those states and did not know that, yes, that is a true thing. They have laws against sex toys. I do not know exactly what they are, but there are laws against. So every Spencer's in my youth that I ever went to, it was on the edge. And I saw some things that always made me blush and go, oh my goodness. And then at the age of 38, I walked into a Spencer's today in Florida and realized that they sell sex toys.
And I looked at her and I was like, what do you mean? They've always...
I know. I was like, wow, they've evolved over 20 years. He's like, nah, they've been selling sex toys like forever.
In some form or shape, they've expanded.
Right. There's a whole wall of sex toys. Not ones I would pay my money for, y'all. I'm just... Maybe if you've had a good experience with one, tell me, because then maybe I would, but... No, I'm a little bit of a snob about sex toys. I know that. But, so we're walking through the mall, not modulating our voice as much as I think we should have. And I'm like, no, the Mississippi Spencer's when I was a teenager did not sell sex toys, or they would have been run out of fucking town. But the highlight of the day, other than trying on, so we went to Torrid.
Yeah.
New favorite store. Love that store. OMG. God, they're expensive, though. I will only ever go with coupons. You and I were going to go shopping anyway.
Right.
Because that we were, like, going to do it. And then, of course, our baby girlfriend, we were like, no, come with us. And she was all excited, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason we would go together is, one, we like to do that. And two, I like for you to approve the clothes I'm going to buy. Yes, right?
Absolutely.
So... I don't know anything for a fact, but I've now gone to two or three separate Torrids, and every single time it's had a total baby girl vibe. And I know, I look at the world through the prism of a baby girl. I get that.
Baby girl colored glasses.
I totally need a fucking pair of those, okay? If anybody knows how to create something like that, I need a pair of... I need to be able to look at the world through baby color, girl colored glasses. Anyway, but I get, that's the vibe I get. There are shoppers who get very, like, weirded out that there's a man back there, look like pawing through the underwear drawers with me to go, no, what's your size again? I like these. But in this instance, they actually were like, oh no, here's the couch where you can sit, which led into the fitting room.
Yeah.
So that I could walk directly out and stand in front of you.
Yes.
To show you what I was wearing.
It was perfect.
It was perfect. It was like, you couldn't have planned this any better. And it was not until after I had tried on my last thing, I was trying on jeans, that I realized there was a mirror behind me because I had put all my focus on you. So that was awesome too. I don't know what the highlight of the day was, but I can still taste the Red Robin fries yes. in my mouth. So that might have been the highlight.
The burger was so good too.
The burger, you know, and I was able to get a burger with a lettuce bun, and that is why we went to Red Robin, because you can do that. But yeah, it was really the French fries. Here's what, so their bottomless French fries, and we were all like, yes, bottomless French fries. And so our server brought out some more fries, mm-hmm. and I was the only one who ate them. And then when he came back through, we were still sitting there talking and hanging out. He's like, do you want more? And our friend and my daddy said, no, we're fine. And so then I was like, yeah, no, I guess we're fine. If daddy has said no, I should probably not speak up and say yes. But I'll tell you, I wanted another basket of bottomless fries. I would have eaten them. Happily.
And then of course we ended the trip in the one way we know how to end or do it. We stopped for a coffee.
We did stop for a coffee. Hey, Dunkin' Donuts in our area is doing $2 lattes for happy hour. If you don't think I'm gonna go get me a latte almost every day, I'll be scrounging in the car for quarters. Okay, I'm sorry I had to pay you in 200 pennies that I found in couch cushions. I'm gonna need me that $2 latte. So I was a little, I'm not going to talk about it here because I would need a full 30 minutes to do that. But we did have drama this week. I personally had drama. Daddy got me through it. I talked about it in teeny tiny little itty bitty bits on Twitter. But it was a person behaving badly.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to you, and thanks to the work I've done with my therapist, and thanks to 4 years as a freelance writer and understanding more of what I'm capable of, I was able to step back and look at this person's bad behavior and say, that's some bullshit. And just let it. Mm-hmm. I didn't let it go in a way that I think you would have liked me to have let it go. I had to take one more Scorpio INTJ step to kind of go, oh, I'm going to get a last word here. Knowing I wasn't going to get a last word, but it made me feel better. but that drama and that person is, for the time being, out of my, I don't have to worry about
that. It's out of your life.
And you know what's weird? As awful as that person was to me in that situation, it's all work related, but the moment it really was severed and I knew it was done, I felt 10 pounds lighter.
It was like a weight came off your shoulders, didn't
it? I was like, oh, hallelujah. So, yeah, if you follow me personally on Twitter and you're like, what the hell is going on there? And it was, it's fine now.
Yeah.
You know, it's really good now, but it made for a very long week. I needed our trip to Torrid today. I had really good coupons too.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this gorgeous blue lacy bra thing that I really think has to make some appearances on my personal Instagram and my website. I'm just saying, I think I need some sexy selfies.
I think you're correct.
I got a blue thong to go with it. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited. Woo!
And I'm plumb wore out from spending the day with two baby girls.
You were a good daddy.
I know.
I mean, even when you're not actually a daddy to one of us, you're kind of a daddy to all of us. You were a really good daddy, even though you didn't let me have as many french fries as I wanted. Just saying. He's giving me the look. He's like that side look where he's not actually turning his full face to me. We call it the side eye, but it's different. It's a daddy side eye.
With the raised eyebrows.
Yeah, the eyebrows that speak. Yeah. Yeah, you have eyebrows that talk to me. All you have to do is cock an eyebrow. I know it's a paragraph. I know, like, you've just spoken for 5 minutes. I know. And the appropriate response when an eyebrow goes a certain direction is to go, I'm sorry, daddy. Or, being the baby girl I am, to vigorously deny what I am being accused of by that eyebrow.
brassy little thing.
Well, I can handle being brassy. I just don't like being bratty. Other people? Oh, I saw a blog post by a sex blogger I like, Candy Snatch Reviews. She does a lot of reviews and she just takes great pictures. And she had a picture for Sinful Sunday. I'm going to share it on our blog for Share Our Shit Saturday, of her in this pink little corset, and she's got a stuffy that's I think a unicorn, and she's just gorgeous.
It's so fluffy.
Well, I wasn't caring about her unicorn. I was thinking of her, and like she's just gorgeous. And she titled, I think, Waiting for Daddy, and I was like, oh yes, I want to wait for Daddy like that too. I won't look like you in a corset like that, but I would like to wait for Daddy too, just like that. So I'll probably share that on the blog because that was really, really good. Anyway, I'm now definitely at the point of rambling.
Yes.
We're anybody who's still hanging out, and you deserve a medal. I wish I could give you one.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready for bed. I'm exhausted.
I know.
Y'all wore me out today.
We did, and we recorded late this week.
Yeah.
And we did so well last week.
I know.
Okay, I guess if you insist.
Let's these good folks go.
I know.
We'll be back.
Day. I know. We will. And I've got to get off my ass and do the work I'm supposed to do for the website. Oh, I'm working on it. Okay, y'all.
All right.
We love you guys.
We love you.
You're awesome. Thanks for going on the weird, funky journey earlier and then the total baby girl journey these last 20 minutes. We'll see y'all next week.